We are now recording. We are now playing Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, February 28, 2009. Tomorrow's March. March. Julius Caesar, March of Tides. March of Ides. Got a nice one for you tonight. A nice one going on now.
Systems technologies worldwide. And so we get a tremendous amount of feedback almost every day on different things that go on that most people aren't aware of. What I want to do now is talk a little bit about the human body and educate you a little bit in greater detail than I did the other day in my lecture, and take you into the depths of systems if we have enough time and enough space to do this. Now, yesterday I was talking about the body. And I was saying that 5% minerals in the body control 95% of the metabolic functions. Minerals contain intelligence. And unfortunately, we haven't really respected the intelligence in this world. For example, on Era, where Sannyasi comes from in the Pleiades, they don't ever mine their homeworld planets. Mining is done on asteroid belts. It's never done in a homeworld. Because the planet that you live on is like the mother. And the mother, you don't want to be digging holes in her skin and doing operations on her when she doesn't really require it. And that's what we've been doing here. And as a result of all the injustices that we've done to the earth, a lot of people don't realize a few things. Number one, the aura field of a human being and how it's created. And I talked about it yesterday, but basically what happens in the aura field of a human is in the brain, when the switching at the synaptic rate takes place, it sends wires through 72,000 major nadis in the human body. Down here a little ways. In this slide right here, I'm showing the brain, the spinal cord, and the actual axons themselves. In our formulation, we make special formulas. It's a combination of formulas that I got from different Tibetan masters and the Pleiadians, and then we kind of mixed it. But what happens is you've got these wires that go through the body. Anytime you have an ordinary wire, like this wire, if you took it across a battery, electricity would flow negative to positive through it. If you were to unhook the battery and reverse it, the electricity would go in the other direction. Anytime electricity is flowing through a wire, you have magnetic fields at right angles. And anytime you reverse the battery, the field reverses its polarity. If I were to connect this battery and disconnect it at a high rate of speed, at whatever rate I was playing with the battery, so would the field change around the wire. That field change is called vibration. When the brain does that, it sends vibrations down through the axons in the body, of which there are 72,000 of them. When you're in a high-stress environment, you need to put lots of sodium, potassium, and phosphorus in your bodies. And I would say anywhere on Earth right now is a high-stress environment, because these are the chemicals that your body uses. In order to keep the myelin sheath, which is the insulator, in other words, if you have two wires in the same container, you don't want them to short circuit. We have what's called a lecithin, or a sheet of fat around each wire. And this is kept strong by lecithin, which comes from coconut. In my vitamin formulas, I use a thing called PC lecithin to help keep that going. When that gets low, you start getting ringing in your ears, which eventually becomes tinnitus. So anytime you have ringing in your ears, you can bet that there's too much electricity in your body and not enough insulation between the wires. So this takes place, and it goes down through the spinal cord and is distributed through the different endocrine glands in the body. These endocrine glands are controlled by chakras. As a result, you have an outside field, sometimes called the chi energy, the kundalini energy, that excites itself up and down the body in 90-degree angles with the way the electrical field goes. This then produces the aura field. Now, the aura field is a summation of your environment. In other words, whatever you do in your environment, that's basically what your aura field is going to do. If, for example, you take a group of people around New York here, there's a certain series of pollutants. For example, we were testing with receptors this weekend. We were testing the human body to find out what this general area needed. And we found that in New York City, the people that at least came to our booth, we had to use a lot of sapphire receptors, and which is what this area needs. So that means that in the heart chakra, in the heart, in the circulation system for people around here, as a general characteristic of this city, it's low. Okay? Sometimes we go to some places and we'll test 200 or 300 people like we did here, and we find they need an aquamarine, the immune system is off. Or we'll find that they need a ruby, meaning the pituitary body is off. But here, we found that the heart was weak in most people that came through our booth. So anyhow, when you define this frequency, your aura field is determined by the vibratory rate of the foods that you digest, the liquids, the air, and each other. Now, in a human being, if you have one human being with an aura field, and that person does not ever encounter another human being, that person has no personality. Your personality never develops, ever. But as soon as you have a second human being, the first person reflects off the second and back and forth, and so now you have a reflection of energy, and now you form a personality. Okay? When you have a third human being or more with its aura field, you create a tertiary field of the interactions of all three personalities. And this tertiary field is known as the astral plane, the next level of energy, the plane from within. We have 7 levels of consciousness, and the astral plane happens to be level 6. If one of these people, 1, 2, or 3, were to lose their form, what would happen is they would go up on the astral plane until one of these other two people got pregnant, depending on which one was male or female, then that person would return back from the astral plane to the physical plane. The science of going back and forth between this plane and this plane was pretty much held in the confines of religion, organized religion, for the last 2,000 years, has contained this information, especially the Catholics and the Tibetans, all of them. Depending on how the religions distribute the information determines on how, you know, what the religion is all about. The Tibetans, for example, have tremendous control of it in the fact that when the Dalai Lama gets to be a certain age, the monk will say, the Dalai Lama will tell the monks that there's going to be a new Dalai Lama come to a nearby village. He'll leave his form, and 6 or 8 years later, this person will be found in a village somewhere near the lamasery or sometimes far away, like Lobsang Rama, for example, was born clear over here in America. Then they'll go down in a procession to the village, pick up the Dalai Lama, bring him back, and when they bring him back, then he'll, of course, recognize certain artifacts, know most of the personalities of the monks, and he'll identify artifacts that they didn't bring down for him to identify. So there's a definite confirmation made. So when you visit a Tibetan lamasery, you see a 9-year-old kid running the place, it's because of this principle. This principle came through the teachings of the rishis. And the rishis were the ancients that came to Tibet, to the Brahmins from the Pleiades. So this is, once again, extraterrestrial science applied to religion. When you realize that all of space and time is made up, energies and beings from the astral plane then compose the next plane up above it, which is the mental plane, and on and on and on, until you end up with one field of energy, or one being, which is the ultimate being. And this is the hierarchical constitution that makes up space and time, and also causes the division of souls as we know it. When you take a group of people, like in this room, you establish a planetary aura. And when you take a group, in this room would have a personality. If you were to take all of the people in New York, you have a personality of New York. It's different than the one, say, from Oklahoma City. You take the summation of all of the cities in the United States, and you end up with the spirit or the summation aura field of the USA, which is different than other countries. There's a lot of astral energy in these aura fields. And in these astral energies, entities reside. And usually they reside in what is known oftentimes as a second ether. And this becomes the functioning place of places like the White Brotherhood. And also places that people from Theta Reticuli can move into, or different higher entities on top of that. The second ether is part of the physical realm. It's part of the physical plane, but it's beyond the range of most human senses. So I'm sure some of you probably already know this, but this is the way it is. Now what happens is, if you take all of the aura fields of all of the nations, all the people, you end up with the Earth's aura field, which changes by attitudes of humanity. The unfortunate thing about that is, at this point in time, the Earth aura field is polarized to what we call the growth-resistant generation, meaning that the Earth's aura field is not polarized to what I would consider the vibratory rate of the people in this room, but it's polarized to the people that wouldn't even approach this hotel or come to this show, because they're not into the healing of the Earth. They're not into the healing of anything. They're into the destruction of the Earth. They don't have respect for themselves. And, of course, they're into tremendous greed and monetary wealth. So these are kinds of things, which is misuse of what we call the third ray. That's where the Earth's aura field is as we speak. Now, if you realize that the Earth is part of the Sun, and then we have the Mercury, the Venus, and the Earth, and Mars, and Jupiter, and all the other planets, and all of these planets, on one level or another, have an aura field. And that aura field works within the aura field of the Sun. And strangely enough, probably every other heavenly body, including some of the asteroids going around Saturn, which are also inhabited, all of these are probably oriented more towards the aura field here in this room. But because the Earth has this negative field emanating around it, there's a tremendous pressure that's put on the Earth from all the planetary bodies. And as we go in our sojourn around the Pleiades, which takes 25,827.5 years, as we push from the Piscean Age, which is the age of the believer, into the age of the knower, human minds become much more concentrated. Human auras become much more concentrated, either up or down in frequency, depending on which way we're going, to the point that what I would call the homeopathic or radionic vibration becomes so intense that all the planets in the Sun begin to react against the Earth. And so as a result, this reaction, especially when the planets align themselves with other nearby stellar bodies, creates tremendous pressure on the Sun and the Earth. So as a result, we have massive Earth changes, massive earthquakes, and massive shifts. When this situation becomes apparent, it starts broadcasting information to all different races in space to such a degree that assistance becomes very necessary. But at the rate the planet is waking up, before the assistance can be rendered in a positive mode, a tremendous negative assistance will become apparent first. And that's what we're about to see. We're on the eve of that right now. So it becomes very important to understand how the aura works, which I've just shown you in basics, to understand this thing. Usually what happens is we work within moon cycles. The first major planetary bodies that we are concerned with is the new moon and the full moon cycle. Right now we are in a new moon cycle. They each occur about 2 1/3 weeks out of the month. During the first third, or 2 1/3 weeks, when you have the full moon, the negative energies are emanating from the astral plane, and from the astral plane, because they emanate in this direction, causes a lot of chaos on this planet, as you well know. You can see crime rate going up and all these kinds of things. In our systems technologies, in a lot of the work that we do, with nature especially, we always do our programming and projecting during the new moon period, the period of phase that we're in now. And the reason we do that, then there's no basic resistance from the full moon energies. And when you start establishing this in your personal biorhythms, your life becomes very easy to control. If you don't recognize this cycle, you'll be an individual with a life usually out of control, especially if you're New Age, because New Age people, if they don't work within the cycle, they go directly into confusion. People that are not New Age or free-thinking people that are oblivious to this thing will function pretty much in a bastardly way, as do the ones that function and they create the negative growth-resistant generation aura around the Earth. In the mineral kingdom, the minerals, because they contain intelligence, some of the things that we shouldn't do is bury our dead in the earth when they are sick and diseased. They should be cremated. And we have been out of, because it's religious practice, for centuries, burying the dead in the earth. We continually infect and teach the DNA of the minerals that teach us consciousness bad tricks, new diseases. Okay? It's very important to understand that. The minerals occur on three different vibratory frequencies, okay? The low frequency, which runs through the system that I outlined over here, and all of the minerals go through the system, and you can break this system that I drew here down into three vibratory factions. In other words, the 72,000 major wires break down into three factions. The first faction is the low frequency, working through the autonomic nervous system, and that's the subconscious body functions. So you don't think about your heart beating and your breathing and that, unless you get sick and you start coughing or wheezing. Then you think about it or your heart starts flickering on you. This is iron, copper, magnesium, these kinds of minerals. Don't take vitamins with copper in them, because copper causes leukemia in second generation children in your offspring, and it's increasing tremendously. So if you go down to a vitamin store and you buy vitamins that says copper on them, you're talking about a formulation that's been dead for over 20 years, and the person doesn't know what they're doing. It's very important to understand that formulas and vitamins change. We change ours every 2-3 years because things change, needs change. Worldwide, there's too much copper in people's systems. The second range or vibratory rate of minerals for people falls in the mid-range frequencies, which is the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system centers itself in the central frequency. It's responsible for your warm, cold parts of your body, your appetite, your higher feelings. And what happens is, it also works with the immune system. The first key mineral in that frequency range is chromium. And chromium is the first mineral that you want to put in your body should you become sick. Chromium is one of the greatest things for fighting AIDS, for example. In our vitamins, the ones that I make, we use, if you were taking an average dosage, you would take about 100 to 200 milligrams of chrome, and we use a chromium picolate, which is mixed with niacin, because straight chrome, like in the bottle it says chromium, you will not assimilate it. It needs to be married with niacin. And this is a patented formula. Within the stuff that I've done, we use patented processes on each individual step. Second thing in your immune system you need is vitamin A. Vitamin A builds the immune system up so that if you were to take the AIDS virus in, you wouldn't become HIV positive. It would pass through your system. And so we use 40,000 units of daily vitamin A in our formulas in a palmitate form. And a beta-carotene form to build the immune system. Then we use a thing of vitamin C, a special vitamin C that we developed called ester C. Ester C is made from beets, and we use 3 or 4 grams of that daily. Now, the thing about vitamin C in therapy, the fallacy of it is, it comes in ascorbate form normally, or it comes in a mineral form normally. The mineral form, or the mineral ascorbate form, works much faster on the body if you're in a diseased or subclinical condition but the side effect is salting of the tissue or a heart attack. And if you use the ascorbic acid form, the side effect of that, which reacts slower, is you'll probably have diarrhea, and it'll upset your entire digestive system. The ascorbate, the vitamin C ascorbate, doesn't do any of the above, and you can take massive quantities of it. The final mineral that's very important for the body is the high frequency or trace minerals. And these, of course, since the dust bowls of Kansas back in the 20s and 30s, have not been in human food at all. So it becomes very important to assimilate these trace minerals. We use a form of red clay that comes from an Indian reservation in Idaho, and we subject it to deionized water. Deionized water is looking for electricity in a form of consciousness. And what happens is when we're brewing this stuff, the red clay gives up the minerals and creates huge lightning bolts as it goes into the deionized water. Another thing that happens is when you drink the minerals from this container they come in, when you squeeze it, oftentimes you'll see sparks in there on a low humidity day. That's sparks or electricity that your body needs. It's very important. The nervous system that this travels through, this energy travels through, is called the parasympathetic nervous system. And the brain of it is in the earlobes, and the end of it is at the bottom of the diaphragm in the gray matter. Like you have gray matter in your head, it's also in your diaphragm. And that is the circuit that energy flows through. And that's responsible for all of your psychic energy, for your channeling, thoughts of God and higher powers, life beyond, all this kind of consciousness. Intelligence comes from trace minerals. And this also goes down, it comes from the DNA in the trace minerals. One of the things that I've been involved with the Pleiadians and the Andromedans, is a form of life extension. As the Earth rotates around the Pleiades every 25,000 years, we have 12,000 years of darkness and 12,000 years of light. When the Greys and other negative extraterrestrials come here, they don't come here during the dark periods because they are not interested in feeding off the human soul when it's on a retrograde through the dark side or the low side of its phase, of its evolving phase. The human soul grows in consciousness, in ideas, and energy just as a flower does. It just has a different circulatory frequency. The human soul might have to go through a million years of evolution before it evolves into maturity and becomes a free, what I would call a free soul. The area that the soul works within is between the moon and the center of the earth. So a reincarnating soul on the astral plane, even though on the astral plane you might not see a moon or an earth, you'll see some things that you can identify with. And during this million-year period of many incarnations, the human soul will go between this area of the center of the earth and this center up on the moon. This is called the ring pass knot. Okay? Now, what happens is, I remember a couple of years ago in Russia, they were drilling a hole down into the center of the earth. You might have read it in the newspapers. There were about 75 members from different countries. And they drilled this hole, the largest hole and the deepest hole ever known to man. And it had to be pretty far down because I know the ELF generator that the U.S. has in Australia, it goes down into a well shaft 75 miles to put ELF waves into your conduits here. It takes a tremendous depth in the earth. This hole, they got down so far, and they hit something, and they could hear human voices coming out, human sounds coming out of it, and they abandoned the project. It was in the newspapers worldwide. It was probably some form of the lower astral plane, because the physical location of the astral plane in the lower part is in the lower part of the earth. The higher location of the astral plane is in free space between the earth and the moon. Okay? That is one level of where the auric field would stabilize in. Now, the next level of the auric field where it would stabilize would be the entire solar system. So that's where you go into planetary consciousness. And then finally, as we make the great arc around the Pleiades, you know, every 25,000 years, 144,000 souls are what they call space-born and freed again. It's sort of like the epic of Richard Bach and Jonathan Livingston Seagull. But what I'm leaning to is this. The last time that we were going through this negative cycle, just before, at the very peak of it, along came the Greys during the times of Atlantis. And Atlantis was destroyed in what were known as the scalar wave wars. They used what are called antimatter position scalar wave generators. And evidence of the destruction of these weapons is still seen in Bimini Islands in different areas. And the Greys came along and married their intelligence with the black priests of Atlantis, exactly as they came into this generation and married themselves with the secret government. And what the Greys did is shorten the lifespan of man down to about 100 years. At the time Methuselah lived, we were living 650 years or 700 years. So it's really interesting to note that. When you go to your doctor and you walk in, your doctor will say, "Oh, you've got cancer, but don't worry about it. You were prone to have it anyway. Your grandparents had it, your mother had it, your aunt had it. So don't think anything of the fact that you have cancer. Just deal with it, you know." Well, that isn't the way it should be. You shouldn't look at the DNA, and you got to realize that attitude has polarized the allopathic medical field, which is the opposite of the homeopathic medical field, which is sad. You should be able to go into your doctor, and the doctor should say to you, "Wow, gee, George, you're looking great. You're going to live another 75 years, and you're not going to be sick one day. Your father was healthy. Your mother was healthy. You come from a great, healthy family." That's the kind of response you should be getting from a doctor's office when you go in. And that is what will happen when we start to rekindle the vibratory rate of the DNA. How many of you in here have ever studied the DNA? How many of you have never even heard of it? If you go back to DNA, which is the intelligence back in the minerals, we have a thing called base pairs per turn. Okay, the humans, before you're born, you have 48 base pairs per turn. But before you even get into that, first of all, realize what DNA is. DNA, first on a simple level, is a whole bunch of what are called microgenes and genes. As far as microgenes, there's as many microgenes in a strand of DNA as there are stars in the sky. When you get down to microgenes, you get down to 1,250 per strand, and then you get into four amino acids, which are two sugars and two phosphates. This strand is considered, before you're born, it's approximately 48 base pairs per turn long. This is in every cell in your body. If you were to unwind this strand out of your cell, it would be about 3 feet long, okay? About 39.5 centimeters, 1,250. Now what happens is you've got 46 chromosomes spaced along the way. Spacing varies. And you can look at these chromosomes, for the sake of argument, as hard protein, very hard protein. And what happens is, the way this DNA strand works, it works on electricity. Electricity moves through each one of these strands, and depending on where these chromosomes are, will change the frequency. So if you were to look at a readout on an oscilloscope of the genetic pattern, you might see some very fast waves, some very slow ones, some real fast ones, and that would be the human imprint of your entire being. That would be all the intelligence that's going to be carried into your form, your physical form. Now, this is before you're born. This 48 base pairs per turn takes place when you're just about to be born and your nutrients are coming through the placenta of the mother into the embryo. As soon as the child is born, we go from 48 base pairs per turn to 34. The first breath, we now have 34. We have lost 25% of our lifespan in our first breath on Earth. Okay? Just because of the vibratory frequency of in the ground, what's going on in the ground because of mismanagement of this and many other things. When you're 21 years old, you are now down to 18 base pairs per turn, and you have lost over 60% of your life when you're 20 years old. Think about that. Do you think the intelligence of the Creator was dumb enough to give us 10 years times 10 of experience and call that life in one swoop? If you look at Sannyasi, for example, or a Pleiadian, they live anywhere from 8 to 1,200 years, depending on their job occupation. Their explorers in their ships typically live 8 to 900 years. But the people that don't travel around in space and subject themselves to the dangers live a lot longer. If Sannyasi right now would be about 345 years old, her DNA does not age as ours does, and she would appear to be about a 25-year-old woman. So you can see that they are aging proportionately and not disproportionately. Because if you look at how fast a human decays after the teens, you know, at how fast the skin changes by the time you're 35 from when you were one.
Well, let's check that puppy and see what we got on the other side. This is a pretty neat tape. So we will stop it and let's see here. There's a B side of this puppy. I'm not sure. No B side. Well, then what we do now is we go ahead and finish up from the other day the UFO panel from Santa Fe, New Mexico. UFO panel coming right up.
Kind of pressure on them in a lot of ways if they're in the academic mainstream. So
I'm not an academic mainstream
anymore.
No, I never was an academic mainstream. I was an industry. You know, those who can do, those who can't teach. I've just offended half the crowd. But there is something here, Trish. Now, we've heard a lot of interesting stories over the last 45 minutes. But I think we're long on story and short on evidence. My gray basket just enlarged a great deal. I can't say none of this happened. But I think that we really need to put forth evidence rather than stories. I've talked to cops about this problem of people coming forward with new information. And when there's a highly publicized crime, one cop told me that they will get hundreds of calls. You know, they give a number if you know anything about this terrible thing that happened. I said, what percentage of those give you useful information? 1 to 2%, he said. But that's how we solve most crimes. So that means that, say, 98% of what they hear isn't true or relevant. People make up stories. That's why my program this morning, Fraud and Ufology. And because we can't figure out a good reason why they would, we presume they must be telling the truth. There's a lot of strange things go on in the world. People confess to crimes that they couldn't possibly have committed. And any cop will tell you that they run into this all the time. The person who says, I saw everything, and it turns out they weren't even in the state at the time, you know, that sort of thing. So you got to be real careful with these stories, and you got to make a distinction between observation and interpretation. Having a dream may mean that you've been on board a UFO, and it may not. You need more than that to establish that that's reality. So I think we all need to be really careful about evidence first, conclusions later, rather than conclusions first and who needs evidence, I know it's real kind of thing. So, yeah, I sort of a jaundiced view of stories.
Let's take some other questions. Yes, in the front.
I need to preface my question with a statement.
Okay.
First of all, I'm a contactee. All my experiences have been in the waking state, and I haven't reported them because I'm tired of being treated like a chimpanzee. Okay. Second, the hubcap kickers, my experiences don't fit in that category, and there's no way I can prove them. They're just stories, but I know they're real. Right. Secondly, I produce books for a living. I've just gotten a manuscript from England. It's The Truth Shall Set You Free by David Icke. I can't get a publisher to touch it. How's the truth going to come out if the media and whatever won't touch it? So if anybody here knows, I can just get some funding to print it in this country, contact me. What I want to ask about is I was standing in front of the display yesterday of UFO stuff, videos and stuff, many of which I've seen, and I'm bothered by the fact the guys with the wraparound eyes get center stage, and all these people, you know, this person will say, there's 70 races, this man, what about the other 69? And, you know, all this stuff, all this, there's going to be this, there's going to be that. What I'd like to know, I know what's going on with the secret government. I know Intel and Rio Rancho here is 1 year into the 5-year contract on the subdermal chip, and it's right here in New Mexico. I know that there's a timetable happening on this side. You're talking about mass landings, the post-diary predictions for this year that haven't happened yet. And I see, as I stood before this display yesterday, I had this overwhelming sense of an upwelling of something where these other parts of the thing are about to burst through. It's very pregnant. It's a blossoming, though. It's nothing for us to be afraid of. It feels like some sort of critical mass either has been reached or is about to just burst through. And I'd like to hear from any and all of you if you care to comment on what this feel like immediately ahead, this year, next year, whatever. But that's where, not what's been, not 48, not, yeah, there was a peak down there, but how many people here, you didn't ask, how many people are contactees right now? How many people are having waking experiences, not dreams, but waking experiences?
Great question. So her question was, does anyone want to comment on what they see happening, particularly with these other races?
You have raised many issues, but one, if I could start there, is the question of conscious contact or relationship with something that would be described as non-human. And from a journalist's point of view, I would say in the last year or two that I've had more people either writing or calling me to say that they are seeing something come into a yard or onto a porch or into a bedroom or floating through the proverbial window or floating through a wall than I've ever heard before. I have tried to stay away from hypnosis in general and stay with conscious encounters, even though Bud and David Jacobs also make a very strong argument for the fact that we're dealing with a lot of mind manipulation and that in the long run, 100% of what's presented could be actually not there. Let's not get into that argument. Let's just hold that for a moment as a possibility and come back to the issue. If people are reporting what they are seeing, and if those numbers of reports are increasing, it could be because I'm doing radio and television and a lot of things, and so people seek me out more, and therefore it may not be that there's an increase. It may just be that I get more reports. But in the pattern of these reports, this is what I would like to just leave as a question for all of you to ponder. It was day before yesterday, for example. I did an interview with a woman who lives in the Tacoma, Seattle area of Washington. And she was describing events as recently as a few weeks ago of having the so-called small gray type coming through a wall while she was totally conscious into a bedroom. And she thinks they are horrible, thinks that they are... But there's nothing that they say or do that is truthful, feels that she is on the short stick of a long manipulation, and she resents everything that's happening. On the other end of the spectrum, in Puerto Rico, I was there in January, and there was discussion through interpreters with a large variety of people there, and one I think is extremely interesting, that goes the next step beyond the woman I just interviewed, and this is what she does for a living is get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning and takes a truck with sandwiches and juices for people at different factories or stores to get food. So she's always rising early, and it is usually still dark. She was putting the sandwiches into her truck, and she saw a being move about 20 feet across the road from her, and the reflection in the headlights of her truck, she could describe it in Spanish as being this small with the large black eyes, and that it seemed to be afraid of her, or at least was moving away from her, and that may have been her human interpretation. She had a clear enough view, and it did scare her. Shortly thereafter, she does not know if it was a dream. She does not know if it happened in her mind. But she found herself suddenly at a cave entrance with a tall blonde man, hair down to the shoulders, who grabbed a hold of her because in front of her was a gray being like the one she had seen across from her sandwich truck. And the blonde being was grabbing a hold of her and saying, warning her, do not follow. This is bad. Now, it's fine to leave it in the standpoint of this may or may not be a subconscious dream, except this is what happened when she got home. She did take a shower. She knows, she doesn't know whether she was gone or not, but she was taking a shower, and her grandson, about 5 years old, came into the bathroom and said, Grandma, why do you have grass coming off of your back? And she looked down, and coming out of the shower water was a lot of grass in the bottom of the shower. And she didn't know where the grass had come, but she had what she thought was this strange dream. None of it is evidence for anything. It's circumstantial testimony, but it raises some very provocative questions. There are so many mixed signals among the people who are having, quote-unquote, current conscious encounters. All of what I've just told you is we're talking about in this year. Their relationship to it, in general, is one of distrust and largely terror. And I personally am confused about the 1950s to 1990s description of these blonde humanoids at various stages, and the so-called gray androids, which many abductees think they're just programmed, and therefore not the intelligence involved with the planet at all. If the signals are so mixed, and the abductee themselves or the contactee are so confused and feel themselves fear and resentment, what are we dealing with? What are we really dealing with? And where is the intelligence that may be behind what is being presented, whether it's in dreams, upfront physical reality, other dimensional, or whatever? And I think those are the questions in the context in which we should at least listen to and think about whatever happens and crosses our own path.
I'd like to also respond to that, and I think Virgil would too. Stan, did you have something?
Well, that's a fun show, isn't it? I think so. And we got about 42 minutes on there, so let's go ahead and do another UFO panel. These are fun. I love doing UFO panels. I know you guys like them too. This one's over in Seattle. So we'll start on this one.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad you found it to this out-of-the-way corner of the world. It's quite a walk from the other center, isn't it? Is my volunteer here in the room? Where is my volunteer? Hi. Is the room volunteer here? Could we have some water and some cups up here, because this is going to be a pretty hot and heavy next couple of hours, and I'm sure that we're going to need some water. Right. Hello, welcome. My name is Tricia McCannon, and welcome to the Seattle Whole Life Expo, the UFO panel. Hi, Colin. I see a lot of familiar faces out there, including some UFO colleagues, so I'm really glad that all of you could come. Our panel today is going to be a pretty action-packed next hour and a half, or hour and 45 minutes. We have some extraordinary people up here for you, and I'm going to give each of them a chance to talk a little bit about who they are and what they do for about, let's see how many people we have. Fred's going to be on the end, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, are we missing anybody? Oh, Robert Dean.
Yeah.
Hopefully Robert Dean will be making it. He's a wonderful fellow. I'm sure you'll enjoy. So if we can all take about 5 or 6 minutes to sort of talk about ourselves, then what I'd like to do is perhaps open it up for questions. Where's the room monitors? If you guys can sort of cut up some paper back there in the back and pass them out if you don't already have notebooks, we're going to do questions, written questions this time. So once we've all spoken, we'll wind up passing them down to the far ends, or you can raise your hand and the room monitors can come get them, and then we'll sort of distribute them. If you have a question for a specific person, great, or if it's a general question, we'll sort of pass it around and, you know, tear at it with our teeth. The theme for this particular UFO panel is UFOs in the coming millennium, and one of the reasons that we chose that theme is because we're in the 1990s, and the year 2000 is close approaching. I know a lot of you are probably here because you have a lot of interest in the UFO subject, and perhaps you've seen something on television or in your own skies, and you'd like to know a little more about it. So I'd like to know how many of you in here have actually seen a UFO. Wow, that's great. That's a lot of people. How many of you have seen them here in Washington? Around Seattle? Near Seattle? Near Mount Rainier? Has anyone been to Shasta, Mount Shasta? Any other mountain sites where you've seen them? Good. How many of you feel that you may have had some sort of more personal experience, either physical experience or dream state experience with extraterrestrial contact? Wow. Pretty good group. Well, we certainly have some people up here who've been involved, including myself, in exploring what all that is about. And as you'll see, we all come from slightly different perspectives. Let me sort of introduce our panel. Oh, Bob, good, you came. We have Fred Bell, who just came in on my far right. Fred is an Andromedian contact. He lives in Southern California. He's been speaking on new technologies, alien technologies, for a long time. Very interesting person and someone I know that you'll enjoy. Vance Davis is one of the famous Gulf Breeze 6. Gulf Breeze 6 that you may have heard of on television. He was one of the intelligence military officers who received information on the Ouija board many years ago that told about the coming changes in Earth prophecies and the things that are going to happen soon. And he's one of, I think, two that are out speaking. Bud Hopkins is a very noted and well-known icon in the UFO research field. He really pioneered the abduction phenomena and hypnotherapy and legitimized it to a large degree. Really, the last 15 years, his work has just changed the face of how people view what has been going on with one-to-one encounters through hypnosis and so forth. He's the author of Missing Time and Intruders, and he's one of my personal favorites up here. I think you'll enjoy Bud a great deal. Brian O'Leary, Dr. Brian O'Leary, is a physicist. He worked for NASA, and he is really on the leading edge of bringing the new technology of free energy to the public. He's traveled internationally and is in the process of completing his 8th book? 10th, but who's counting? And he's going to tell you a little bit about that today. Sean David Morton is definitely our most spectacular personality. Sean's great. I mean, he's been involved in television. He's been a consultant to sightings. The last I heard, he thought he was going to be getting his own TV show. Yes, this is very good. And he's a psychic, and he has a book out called Millennium and the Delphi Associates Newsletter. So you'll enjoy him. I always tease him. Last year I told him he was the bad boy of UFOs. So it's like the motorcycle and the black leather jacket. Dr. Richard Boylan, yes, is the author of two books. I have not read either one of them, but they both have to do with the abduction phenomena. And his take is a little different from Bud's. He seems to be looking at cases that he interprets as more positive. So he's going to be a fresh voice. This is the first time we've had the opportunity to have him on this panel. Dr. Joseph Burke is a member of CSETI, the Center for the Studies of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which is located out of North Carolina and was started by a man named Dr. Stephen Greer, and since Dr. Greer can't clone himself, Dr. Burke is the closest thing to it. They look similar, they sound similar, and they cover twice the territory. CSETI is a group that was created primarily to teach humans to do control thought sequencing and actually bringing in spaceships consciously and trying to do telepathic communication with the occupants of the ships. So he has a very unusual perspective. And one of my personal favorites is Robert Dean. Bob Dean is an ex-military officer who served in the NATO headquarters of SHAPE, which is the supreme headquarters of Allied forces in Europe. Yes. And for many years, well, actually about 3 years or 4 years, he had access to documents that showed that the U.S. military knew at least 20 years ago of four different groups of extraterrestrial beings. Myself, I'll tell you a little bit about me. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I come all this way. I'm the only person, I think, from the South who comes out and speaks, but believe me, there are a lot of conscious people down there. Shocking, but true. You have to look really hard, but they're sort of like, you know, closet consciousness. I started the UFO Forum, which is a nonprofit group, about 6 years ago in Atlanta. And I've been traveling and speaking internationally for the last 3 years, and I'm just finishing my first books. So some of these guys are a little in advance of me. I speak a lot about UFOs and the multidimensional aspects of it and the ancient civilization aspects, tying in what's happening in current day and the millennium changes to what has happened in the past cycles of the planet. I'm also a clairvoyant, and unlike Sean, who sees more of the future, I only get about 20% future. I see the past, and so I, you know, go back, you know, 5 and 10 and 20 and 50,000 years looking at the time track. So I tend to look at things from the point of view of longer cycles. So what I'd like to do first is ask, Bob, would you like to start? Bob Dean.
Thank you, Trish. I'll try to be brief so I can give a lot of my peers up here some opportunity to talk. I am known as a long-winded old scoundrel once I get started on this subject, because this to me is the most important issue of our time. I've concluded it's probably... Okay, is this better? As I was saying, I am convinced that this is indeed not only the most important issue of our time, but very likely the most important issue in the history of the human race. And I have spent 30 years looking at this issue. I began in the military. I precede my comments by telling you that I got into this field through the back door. The side door. I was a professional soldier for most of my adult life. I was interested in the phenomenon, but I was not convinced of anything. I was a curious skeptic. And once I began to look at it, once I had an opportunity to see it, and look at the cover-up, look at the lies, look at the material that was available, I concluded that we are indeed dealing with probably the most important issue in the history of the human race. And I won't have time to go into all of the explanations of why I feel that way. And I'm going to try to do a lot better in my workshop this afternoon, where I have some time, and plus I have a slideshow I think that would be very interesting to most of you, that I'm sure you've never seen some of these photos ever before. My biggest complaint is simply this. I've gone beyond the UFO issue. That was my beginning. My biggest complaint today, and I want to share this with you before I sit down, is that this particular matter, this cover-up, this issue, this lie, among many, many, many others, but this one is the biggest. The cover-up on this issue, the reality of what we are confronting, the ramifications, the implications of what this means to the human race, your government and mine, and most of the governments on this planet, are sitting on top of the greatest secret never told. And I am angry about it. I'm an old soldier. I'm pissed off about it. I am aggravated as hell about the fact that there are bureaucrats, arrogant bureaucrats in Washington and in other parts of our country that are making national policy on this issue that have never been elected. And they are not responsible either to the executive or the legislative branch of our government. And they're making national policy that's affecting the lives of every man, woman, and child in this country. They're making national policy that's affecting the lives of every human being on this planet. They're sitting on top of the greatest story of all time. And it goes far beyond the UFO. The UFO is a triggering mechanism. It goes far beyond the crop circles. The crop circles are a triggering mechanism. It goes far beyond the appearances of this beautiful lady that keeps showing up here, there, and everywhere on the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, this issue, once we come to terms with it, once we inform ourselves and educate ourselves, this issue is going to change our world forever. And I frankly must tell you that I figure that that time has indeed come. It's long overdue. Now, you Americans have got to regain your Constitution, or you can just kiss it goodbye, because it is being trashed and flushed down the toilet. And I don't tell you that you're not concerned. I don't threaten you, and I don't insult you. All I will say is that you're uninformed. And inform yourselves. The evidence is there. And people like myself and all of us here at this table have some things to share with you that are important and that are real. But I think that most of my friends here would agree with me that don't walk away from this room today or from this conference believing anything any of us have said, particularly just because we have said it. Go out there and look for yourselves. The evidence is there. It's overwhelming. Inform yourselves and take your Constitution back before it's too late. And rather than ramble on a little more, I want to say it's a pleasure to see the room so full of bright and curious faces. And God bless all of you. And I'll be talking to you later.
My name is Dr. Joseph Burke.
Well, that's about all the time we have today, but this will be continued. This is a hot UFO conference, I'll tell you that one.